Hello and welcome to the Movie Robcast. Before we get on with the show, just a bit of housekeeping. On this episode, we discuss The Flash and Ezra Miller, whose preferred pronouns are they and them. At one point in the programme, I refer to them as he and him and his, even though my co-host Rob Wallace has just pointed out that Ezra Miller's preferred pronouns are they and them. But I was so caught up in our discussion of the film and Ezra Miller's place in it that I was unaware that I was using more traditional pronouns. So you'll have to excuse my ignorance on that. We're all a work in progress. Thank you very much for your indulgence and enjoy the show.
Tell me something. You can go anywhere. Another timeline. Another universe. So why do you want to stay and fight to save this one? Because this is the world where my mom lives. I'm not going to lose her again.
Time has a pattern that it can't help reliving. Different people, different worlds, drawn to each other like magnets.
My face.
So my face.
If you were to go into the past, you have no idea what the consequences can be.
Bruce, I could fix things.
You could also destroy everything.
This can't be happening. I completely broke the universe.
Zod,
we've been waiting for you.
I created a world with no metahumans. And now there's no one to defend us.
Want some help?
Oh. You are?
Yeah. I'm Batman.
I can't undo what I did. If I can't get back, there might not be a future.
What's the play? Batman, what do we do?
We try not to die.
Not Clark.
My name is Kara.
I'm
Barry. We're Barry.
Welcome to the Movie Robcast, and we are on Crime Alley, also known as Long's Court, just off of Leicester Square, because we've just seen The Flash, and we're going to be talking to you today about The Flash. So I'm your host, Rob Daniel, and as always, I am very happy to say that I'm joined by my learned co-host, Mr. Rob Wallace.
I'm Batman.
He's Batman. I'm Batman too. Are either of us The Flash?
I mean, we've both got the same name, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, today we're going to be talking about The Flash. So, the new film from the DCEU. Who knows if it's going to be the last time we see these actors playing these particular characters. We'll get into all of that. But, yeah, Rob, very quickly, shall we do the plot synopsis and then we'll... as is tradition, more of a meaty plot synopsis afterwards.
Okay, for some reason, the IMDb link on the actual Flash page doesn't work. So, the IMDb link on the Wikipedia page to the Flash does not actually work, which it seems remarkably on point for this film. Wow, IMDb is down, maybe. Which again, possibly on point for this film.
IMDb is down, wow.
IMDb is down.
Well, it looks like something has actually collapsed.
Oh no, my facts!
Yeah. Oh no, my knowledge of all of the cast and everything. What am I going to do now?
I mean, like,
Wikipedia.
Rip the one from Wikipedia, yeah.
Wikipedia won't ever let us down.
In this film, Barry travels back in time to prevent his mother's death, which brings unintended consequences.
Yeah, so basically this is like a Flash origin story. As we just heard in this film, Barry Allen, played by Ezra Miller, the Flash, he is still traumatized by the death of his mother when he was a child. He is trying to get his dad, who was wrongly convicted of the murder, released from prison after many, many years inside. He discovers that if he runs fast enough, he can go back in time and look at all the different timelines and a multiverse, if you will. And oh my God, if he goes into the past, maybe he can change it so that his mum didn't die. And that's kind of what he does. And if you've seen the trailer, you will know that there are multiverse elements in this. So we have Ben Affleck as Batman, but we also have Michael Keaton as Batman, who of course played Batman in the 89 film and in the 92 film, Batman Returns. So this again continues that thing that we've been doing recently of getting old actors in to play the parts, even though someone else is playing the part as well, and we all kind of geek out in that fan way. And the other thing here is that he meets the younger version of himself and has to show him the ropes in how to be the Flash as well. So they go off on this crazy adventure. The threat is something from kind of the early days of the DCEU. So General Zod is back. And it's like, oh wow, so now we have to save the day from General Zod. And
10 years after the fact.
10 years after the fact, we have to retread that ground and try and make it right again. And lots of this gets into a meta commentary that we'll talk about in spoilers, because there are some big things to talk about in spoilers.
As you say, it's very much in keeping with the current trend of let's just get everyone back.
Let's get everyone back and do the whole multiverse thing, which seems to be the end game result of like 80s nostalgia that we had 7 or 8 years ago. And it's just been continuing and everything is just nostalgia now. So what is the most nostalgic thing than to get the people from the films you loved when you were a kid, but put them into a movie now with all the amazing special effects and stuff?
People are coming. That from over there.
Okay, right, fair enough. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
Sorry, we're just recording a podcast. We just ducked off here, thank you.
That was the med police just popped round into Crime Alley to see what we were doing. Brilliant. Well, that's staying in. Okay, cool.
Oh, we thought they were just having sex. This is far more shameful.
That's right. Well, we thought there was some deviancy going on down here, and we were right. Nerds are talking about superhero movies. Disgusting. Well, it is Crime Alley, I suppose. Yeah, so basically the end result of that is you get everyone back into these films and then you...
And the fact that superhero movies have now arrived at the point where they're going to start looking at the kind of multiversal alternate versions of the characters, and it's just kind of perfect timing for that.
Well, it is perfect timing in a way, although the other thing is that we have had recently Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse released, and there is a lot of crossover between some of the things in that movie and some of the things in The Flash that we won't be able to talk about until, I would say, the second round of spoilers for this, because, of course, we will do a spoiler section for The Flash, then we'll have to do a spoiler section for the people that have seen The Flash and Spider-Verse. Well, let's just talk about the film in a non-spoiler way to begin with. What did you think of it? I saw an incomplete version of it a couple of weeks ago, and we'll get into that in spoilers. Rob has just seen the film for the first time, literally 15 minutes ago. So, Rob, what did you think of the film?
I, for the most part, actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of big swings. It's surprisingly silly. It's quite broad with the comedy. A lot of the gags land, but it's also got the kind of heartfelt stuff in there around his mum and having lost her, and the idea of, like, you know, everybody wishing they could go back and change the thing. And he's, you know, if only I could run fast enough, and it turns out he can. Performances are uniformly good. Ezra Miller, and I think we probably do need to touch upon, as everybody, you know, has in there, I think, to put it lightly, controversy surrounding him and various crimes he may or may not have committed. Go back and say, actually, you know, preferred pronoun is they, actually, so I'm gonna say that retroactively, for which they are apparently seeking mental health treatment. And again, it's one of those things, it's like it's really difficult to comment on, because it's like we know as much as everyone else does, and ultimately some people be like, well, I don't want to see the film, I just don't want to support anything they're involved in, and that's understandable.
Have you seen that on the internet, that there are people saying, I'm not going to see it because Ezra Miller's in it? They've done like a Mel Gibson thing where it's like, I don't agree with the person, so therefore I don't agree with paying money to see him in something.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been. It's not a massive campaign, but there is like a definite element who are like, actually, I'm not that bothered.
Yeah, I wonder if that's because
people are not that bothered about a Flash film either. I mean, I don't think the world was clamouring for the Flash movie.
I mean, it even starts, and this isn't really a spoiler, but it kind of makes the film in its opening act kind of makes a bit of a joke that the Flash is the one you go to when the others aren't available.
Yeah, that is a gag early on, that's right. Yeah, with the Ezra Miller thing, it's very difficult because it's like, well, he is suffering from mental health issues and he is getting help for that. That is not to say that people with mental health issues are as violent as he is alleged to be. This is one of those things where I think it's like, well, yeah, with Mel Gibson, you have to separate him from what this film is. And some people can do that easier than others, and I completely understand why people can't do that. Because you're thinking, well, the things he's done in real life have a real life consequence. That said, I actually found it quite easy to divorce that in my mind and watch him. I did have a certain amount of sadness thinking, well, you are a very good talent, and you do carry this film in a double role. And you don't think of it as the same actor. You think of it kind of like, yeah, with Dead Ringers, because Jeremy Irons is also in this as well as Alfred. You think, yeah, they are two separate characters. So Ezra Miller is a great talent, but it is one of those where I can completely understand why people can say, well, I don't care about that, because in real life he has done violent things.
And, I mean, it's always like, it always feels so like, and, you know, it's a shame, it's overshadowed. It's like, no, it's not a shame. It is something that does need to be addressed. Other actors, including Jeremy Irons, are very good in it. It's lovely to see Michael Keaton back in the role. Gets a little bit too fan servicey for me, and all this in the trailer. As nice as it is to have him say, you want to get nuts, let's get nuts. It's also like, I almost wish there was a moment where the Flashes looked at each other and was like, what is that? That means nothing to us. He's just said a very random thing. There's almost like, it's almost like they're meant to acknowledge he's just said something cool, but in real life you'd be like, yeah, I guess. Like,
yeah, I have to admit, I didn't know, because I didn't watch that trailer until after I'd seen the first version of this film that I saw, and I did quite like the fact that he said that, to be honest, just because I like the line. But you're right, in universe, it doesn't make sense that they don't react with slight bewilderment.
Is that a thing you've said? Have you said that since you went faced off against the Joker?
To your point, yeah, I agree. I think that, for the most part, this is an enjoyable movie. It actually reminded me, in ways good and bad, of that original Joss Whedon Justice League film, which I get on more with than I think you do. I like the humour of that film. I like the fact that it actually tries to go for recognisable emotion rather than Wagnerian emotion and sweep that is Zack Snyder's MO. There's really, really good comedy in this film, particularly when Barry is showing alternate Barry how to use his powers as the Flash, and alternate Barry is just absolutely giddy with what he can do. That is mined for really, really good comedy. And so that stuff was really good. I thought that the action scenes, it opens up with a couple of action scenes, one of which is just delirious and giddy in terms of the peril and the obstacles that it presents the Flash. I'm not going to spoil it here because it is kind of laugh out loud funny, the absurdity of the situation, but it's
I think it's one thing that Andy Muschietti, the director, gets really well in this, the fact that it is overblown, not always in a good way, as we'll talk about in spoilers. Also Sacha Calle, who is plays Supergirl.
Kara Zor-El.
Nude.
I know, yeah. I did actually make a note because I thought I can never remember Supergirl's name, and I always remember Kal-El, and that's maybe a bit kind of like, I don't know, sexist of me, so therefore I'm going to make a note at this time. What is her name? And it's Kara Zor-El, which is a cool name.
Yes. And she's very good, and she captures the balance of somebody who doesn't necessarily hasn't had the life experiences that Superman has. But is also fundamentally decent and is acquiring kind of that sense of...
Yeah, I enjoyed her as much as I enjoyed Michael Keaton, to be honest.
Certain characters are underserved in different capacities that we'll explore. Yeah, more in spoilers.
Okay. Trying to think of other things that I like that we can talk about that weren't spoilery.
Elements of the older scores. Again, like the fan service, I like some elements more than others. But yeah, when it starts bringing in the old Danny Elfman's Batman score, you're like, yeah. Okay, I'm here for this.
It still works. Yeah. It still works really fucking well. So they go on a mission at one point. So the Barrys and Batman go on a mission. And it feels a bit like a bank holiday special. There's just something about it that doesn't... It seems really cozy. I mean, it's well shot. It just seems like, in a really fun way, like a throwaway superhero film. Here, have this because it's fun. It's not taking itself particularly seriously. And I like that. And I kind of wish that it had stuck that sort of thing, because that felt a bit more like a superhero film of old, of like... this is supposed to just be enjoyment.
Get the fit, I guess, at the with the budgets, they weren't always operating with large budgets, but there is an expectation, I guess, especially when you're dealing with metahumans, quote unquote, that there is going to be, like, especially now with the multiverse, there always has to be some world ending somewhere.
Well, there does, doesn't there? But it's also, like, I think that's like a paucity of narrative imagination as well. But we'll get onto that in spoilers. I saw this, as I said, in an incomplete version. It didn't have an ending, and we'll get to the ending in spoilers. There's a final end to the movie that actually was really good fun. But when I was watching it, I thought, okay, right, so this is incomplete in the special effects as well. The special effects haven't been finished yet. 2 weeks to go until the film gets released. Wow, they're going to have to get those effects done pretty darn quickly then. Watching the film, it's like, oh no, those effects were much more completed than I thought they were. There are certain elements, most noticeably when the Flash is running through using the Speed Force to go back in time, or look at all the different multiverses, that looks very much like how the CGI characters look from The Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah, they look very cartoony. And to start with, I was thinking like, oh, that's a stylistic choice. But then it's just, you look at them and think, this just feels incomplete. This needed another polish. And it almost feels like you've lent into that stylistic choice, because ultimately, there's not really much you can do about it. I mean, this film has some of the worst CGI in any film I've seen for years. Noticeably.
And what would you say was some of the worst?
Almost anything involving the multiverses, and without spoiling it too much. Also, some shots in just the fight sequences. Occasionally, you'll catch one and go, that needed another pass.
Yeah, there were some shots, and I would love to find out. I bet Warner's, if I was to drop them a line, they wouldn't tell me. But I would love to find out if that was a locked edit version that I watched, because I seem to notice this time there were certain shots. There's a point when he's running and he begins to stretch. That seemed to be much better and
it's like basically
more unusual than it was in that
first. Moving through 3D space but leaving the continuous shape of it behind.
Yeah, that basically. Also, there's a point at the beginning when he's running from one city to another. That seemed to be a little bit more polished than I remember it being. But I could be wrong. It could be one of those things where, no, you saw the exact same thing. So,
I did like the gliding effect when he runs, that he's moving so quickly and so effortlessly, he's frictionless.
And that seemed to come across more on this, but it could be that we've just watched it on a massive IMAX screen, whereas I watched it on... just, it was a big screen, but it was just the picture house central main screen, which is your typical kind of like, big screen in a cinema. So, yeah, so other things that about this film. So Michael Keaton, it was good to see him as Batman. He is good as Batman. And Bruce Wayne.
Do you think that was his real hair?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, he grew it out for the film. Yeah, as you said, the performances were very good, including Ezra Miller. And also Ron Livingston and Maribel Verdú is his mum and dad. And it's like, people who know Pan's Labyrinth or Itu Mama Tambien will know Maribel Verdú. And it's like, well, great, because you're not the kind of person I thought they would cast in a superhero film. So that's unusual casting, but you're absolutely fantastic in the role as Barry's mum. Andy Muschietti, who did the It films, it's like, well, you are good at casting.
Ron Livingston as Barry's dad, taking over from Billy Crudup.
Yes.
Who was apparently busy with The Morning Show.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Wasn't a very big role, though. He could have made time for that. And I did like some of the action sequences. I thought there's a scene when Kara Zor-El faces off against some bad guys on the roof of a building. That, I thought, was a really, really good scene. And it has a great punchline as well that we're not going to spoil here, but it was, again, like a nice kind of meta punchline. And there are certain things, there are visual gags and verbal gags that it's like, yeah, there has been some thought put into this and into making this an enjoyable movie. For me, the problem is the ending. The ending is, obviously we're not going to talk about it here before we get into spoilers, but it takes a big bold swing and I think is just another example of superhero pop culture eating itself in quite a spectacular way, and it kind of undercut a lot of the movie for me. And watching it a second time, there were certain points where I was like, oh, I wish I could enjoy this more, but I know what's coming next. Yeah, without spoiling it, how did you feel about the ending?
Yeah, on one hand, I didn't think it worked. On the other hand, it felt fairly inevitable.
Right, well, we'll get into that then, because it will be interesting to know what you mean by that. I have a theory about that as well, but we'll see. Is there anything else to say before we get into spoilers? Would you recommend it?
Yes, I would. Not necessarily more than the other multiverse superhero film that's currently showing multiplexes. But yeah, it's worth a look.
Yeah, it is a weird one because it's like, this
like
is
the final hurrah. Actually, no, it's not the final hurrah because Aquaman 2 is still to come out. The kind of, it feels like a conclusion, doesn't it, to the DCEU so far. Even though, again, we've got Aquaman 2 still to come out.
It does, in a way. It feels like a wrap-up, but also it's an Origins film. I mean, one of the clever things about it is that the Flash has already been introduced, but by having an alternate Flash who has to be taught how to be the Flash, it can be an Origins film as well, so we can find out about the parents and things like that and what made the Flash the Flash. I thought that was clever. It's an Origins film that feels like it's kind of the final statement on something, and we'll get the epilogue of the Aquaman movie. But this seemed to be like a bit grander in terms of, like, you know, getting Michael Keaton back in and looking back at that DC history of having a different Batman in there. It just seemed like, okay, so this is a weird, half-formed kind of swan song hello Origins. It's like, And the fact that it was 5 years apparently in the making, or I don't know, it's like, okay,
yeah,
well,
a child who was looking forward to that, having been announced when they were 13, is now an adult.
That's right. And it apparently came in at $300 million. So it's like, this has been in development a long time, and I think has had a lot of things ironically speeding around it that have changed the shape of what this could be. And they've tried to roll with that, but in some ways I don't think they've actually really succeeded. But anyway, okay, so, and yeah, in terms of, you know, would I recommend this to a casual film goer, it's like, well, it's in no way as good as Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse. It just isn't. In some ways it's easier than Across the Spider-Verse because a lot of it is just a traditional blockbuster adventure comedy movie. So I think that people will get on with it until the ending, and then they'll come out scratching their heads at saying, well, why did that look like that? And what was that about? And blah, blah, blah. Which we're going to talk about now, unless there's anything else about The Flash in a non-spoilery way.
No, I think I'm happy to move on to the next bit.
Coolio. Okay, then, well, yeah, cheers for listening. Don't listen to the next bit if you haven't seen The Flash, because we are going to talk about some spoilers. There are some big spoilers
to
this film.
Should we do our plugs before the spoilers?
Yeah, we can do, yeah.
If you're looking for me online, you can find me on Twitter at Robin Wallace. You can also find my writing, such as it is, at ofallthefilmsites.com, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you may well enjoy our deep dive into the 1986 cult classic Highlander in the podcast Another Time McCloud. It's a scene-by-scene dissection, just general enjoyment of that film. And you can also, so you can listen to that wherever you listen to this, and also follow that on Twitter at McCloud Time, or drop us a Highlander-themed email at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com.
Very speedily done, as is kind of fitting for what we're talking about. Okay, me. Twitter, Rob_A_Daniel. Instagram, RobDan75. Letterboxed, letterboxd.com/RobDan. My writing, electric-shadows.com. If you want to follow this podcast, it is at Movie Robcast on Twitter. It is at The Movie Robcast on Instagram. And if you like what you hear on these podcasts, then please, wherever you listen to your podcast, leave us a star rating. If you want to leave us a review as well, that'd be ace. As always, thank you for listening. And we're now going to get into spoilers. One more time, if you haven't seen The Flash, please don't listen. There are some big spoilers, and we're going to talk about them without reserve. So, yes, we'll speak to you again soon.
Flash, oh, we're going to the spoilers.
Wait, he's Batman?
You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts.
And you're now in the spoiler zone. So, yeah, what do you want to start off with the spoilers?
I guess maybe go through it chronologically?
Oh, what's your first one?
I liked how they disrupted the title that you were expecting to appear, and then Flash gets, not heckled, but, like, you know, called out by those girls, and the title kind of melts away. He's about to start running. It's generating the energy to fuel the title. Also, baby shower.
Yeah, that kind of set its stall out in terms of how mad the film was going to get with all those babies falling out of the hospital window, and as well as gravity being against them, all the objects around them as well.
Like acid and fire and knives.
Yeah, all the scalpels. And then a baby goes into a microwave at one point, but in a good way. It's like,
there's a bad way?
Yeah. No. That was an interesting action scene. It's like, okay, right, so you want to set the comedy out here. It's a bit edgier than we used to, but okay, right, fair enough. I mean, it is also being put against a more traditional action scene with Batman chasing the guys that have got the virus, blah, 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 which I thought was pretty well done.
Ben Affleck seemed to be comfortable. There was a cute moment with the Lasso of Truth, and because, yeah, Wonder Woman's in it.
And that was nice. And yeah, to your point, it does feel like a bit of a last hurrah. It's like, get them all back in.
Two appearances in the DCEU, three, if she turns up in Aquaman 3, Aquaman 2, would have been cameos.
So we had Shazam, the Gods one. And what was the other one? Oh, and this.
And then if she turns up in Aquaman.
Yeah, indeed.
She
turns
up in Aquaman. Actually, she may already have cameoed in more films than she's had her own. I mean, she certainly has in a few, if you know, counting Justice League.
Because she would have had the two Wonder Woman films and Batman vs. Superman and Justice League.
Oh, no, sorry, I mean her own standalones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
she's
currently cameoed in the same number of films that she's had standalones.
Yeah, indeed, to which...
Who is she? Hawkeye? Sorry.
To which Ben Affleck says, hold my beer and look at my Batman film that never happened. I've never actually had a Batman film. So that was all good. I liked that. It was good fun, and it was very funny when the Lasso of Truth causes them to say what they think, and was in Batman saying, I think it's just ego that makes me do this. I mean, if I really wanted to stop crime, I'd give my money away because poverty's... and he's trying to get it off as he's saying it. So not to do it chronologically, but to skip to the very end of the movie. After all the fucking mad stuff that they decided to do in this film that I think actually undercuts pretty much the entire movie, there's that lovely scene with his mum at the very end when he goes back to change everything back. I thought, well,
she
this...
She comforts him as a stranger, and it's like she's just a fundamentally decent human being. But when he steps away from her, and I thought he's about to enter the Speed Force, he's like, is he just going to vanish? Is he just going to, like... And he does step back in and kind of finish the conversation with her. It's like, is he going to vanish? Because I feel like that's just going to disrupt the timeline as well. She's like, I was comforting this really upset young man in the store, and then he just fucking vanished.
Yeah, that would have been an interesting choice. And I like the fact that he gives himself that moment, and then he goes and takes out the tomatoes and puts them, or just holds them, and then goes back to
but
say the final goodbye.
He doesn't go and spy on, I guess, because A, it would be horrific to witness, but he makes no effort to find out who it was who actually killed his mom. He's a member of the fucking Justice League, and he doesn't seem to understand the concept of justice.
As they say in this film, there's that really good explanation of the multiverse just being like cooked spaghetti, just loose, soft spaghetti, intertwining, just being a complete mess. So if you change something in the future, it changes it in the past as well, even before the moment that you changed it, which is proper Austin Powers. Well, don't you worry about that, Austin, and don't you worry about it either. I mean, this could be seen as, and don't you worry about it either, the movie. And none of it really holds together.
You know, okay, wow, we've got two Batman and Supergirl rather than Superman. And at the end of the film, they just go, every single iteration of Superman we can think of that we could get. Like, Dean Cain isn't in there.
I want to get into that. But to your point, actually, there is a big plot hole in this film that is like, well, who killed his mum then? Because that's the thing that has haunted him his whole life. He knows his dad didn't do it. There's a point early on where the reporter that is... kind of sweet on seems to suggest that maybe his dad might have done it, and he says, no, we didn't do it.
Sorry, the reporter he's sweet on, the character Iris West, played by Kiersey Clemons, who was also in Justice League, Zack Snyder's Justice League cut.
Oh, actually, was she playing the same character? Oh, okay, right. I don't remember a lot from those 4 hours of that film. And it's like, well, how are you absolutely sure that your dad didn't do it? Wouldn't you want to see who did do it and bring them to justice, because presumably there's a murderer out there and he might kill someone else's mum. After the first time I saw this film, I thought, well, I wonder if that'll get changed in the edit so they'll address that. No, because I think I watched a pretty much lockdown version of the movie, just minus the end. That is a flaw, right? Because it's like, well, yeah, as you said, you remember the fucking Justice League.
And I thought that was how he was going to get his dad out of prison, by going to the present day and tracking down the guy who did it, proving he did it, as opposed to, I guess, changing the footage of his dad in the store to make his dad look up. And it's like, is that a minor enough change that that's all right? So we've said, like, so you couldn't go back and save her, but you could go back and make that minor change to make your dad look up.
And that's the thing there, is that it's like, in a way, it's like, okay, right, so as with a lot of superhero films, the mum doesn't really matter, but saving the dad is the big thing. Or, a lot of superhero stories, but the dad gets much more of a look in than the mum. Unless you're Superman 2 and Marlon Brando wouldn't allow his likeness to be used, so Susanna York steps up. But that was just a kind of happy accident of Marlon Brando wanting another million for doing no work. But that kind of reminded me of the end of Glass a little bit, in terms of, I mean, I suppose if it's Wayne Enterprises, they can say, no, this is we haven't faked the footage, because the whole point is they've digitally cleaned up the footage, therefore you can see that it's his dad. But it's like, well, that could have been faked. But I think with Wayne Enterprises, no, because you can look at the points on this face and we haven't changed it, blah, blah, blah. Perhaps. But I just think in the future with, like, you know, deep fakes, all reality is going to melt, much like at the end of this film anyway.
Also, yeah, it was a bit jarring. The scene outside the courtroom right at the very end. That's St. Paul's. And there's another scene in this at Smithfield Market. Like, there's a lot of London shooting in ways that if you know London, you'd be like,
this all seems quite familiar. What was the Smithfield's Market scene?
It's the scene where he and his younger self are kind of walking around. He's explaining the theory of...
Right.
Also, the younger version of him during the final fight sequence with the bat cowl that he's wearing.
Yeah.
Because I think it's because of the heavier brow, but it makes him look distractingly like Sam Witwer. The actor Sam Witwer.
Who was the Flash?
No, who's never played the Flash, but just for some reason when Ezra Miller is wearing a heavy cowl with a heavy brow, it just makes him look like Sam Witwer.
And what's he been in?
Ooh, what would people best know? He was in Smallville. He did play, I think, a version of Brainiac in Smallville. He's done a number of video games. He was in the American version of Being Human. He's one of those actors that, like, you'd probably... Oh, he was Ben Lockwood in Supergirl.
Right, okay.
He was a character in Supergirl.
That is a deep cut for all of our nerd fans.
Yeah, I'm showing Rob a photo now. When he's wearing the cowl, remember that face? He looks a lot... He I was just like, this is just a bit distracting. Just slightly distracting.
I'm going to leave that in as an indulgence. It is a nice moment when the Flash makes... Or, like, yeah, the alternate Flash makes his own costume out of a bad costume... And it's all very kind of like, da-da, da-da, da-da. And then it just cuts to him sawing off the ears. And then that bit when he looks around and it's all kind of pulled over his face. When they're flying there in the Batwing, it was like, that's really, really good comedy. And some really, really nice, funny character touches to this movie.
I like how both Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck's Batman had the same final words. Which were, like, don't worry about it, maybe another time. Like, words to that effect.
Yeah, so I didn't spot that. That's a very good spot.
Because when Ben Affleck gets into the car... And kind of says, no, don't worry, we'll do that another time. You're like, no, this is your final scene, isn't it?
Yeah.
And actually giving me like a really nice downbeat, here's a man kind of at kind of world weary, but at peace with his ghosts. And
knowing that the franchise has come to an end for him. There's a lot of meta commentary in this film.
They did miss it, like, you know, when they have to give Barry back his powers and they're setting up the experiment to mirror the one in Star Labs. And they're like, oh, so we're going to splash you in acid and electrocute you. And Michael Keaton's Batman doesn't make a joke being like, yeah, splashing people in acid. That always works really well.
Yeah, that is a really weird thing where he doesn't say, well, you know, the multiverse can go off in other directions. And I've basically been in this situation before where someone else was sprayed with toxic chemicals and became my nemesis. So if you become my nemesis, I'm going to have to put you in Arkham Asylum. That would have been, I mean, it just seems a weird miss that they didn't get that. I did like the way that the Batcave was very analog. I like the production design of that. It's like, this is a very analog Batcave. It's pre-digital. It kind of goes back to 89. It's all kind of like, you know, dials and knobs and things like that and slidey controls. And the Batmobile from the 89 film always looks great. And the Batwing looked good in this. I like it was like kind of like a centrifuge.
And they do the recreate the shot where it goes in front of the moon. It looks and creates the bat signal in front of the moon.
That was great.
To spoil what's probably the big spoiler from the final moments is obviously George Clooney.
That is a Gange stick he's got on, right? I mean, it's like it fucking stinks of Gange in Crime Alley right now. There's, I think someone who works in one of the restaurants has just come out for a quick puff. Okay, yeah, before we get to that, can we just quickly talk about the fact that this film eats itself at the end when they're in the multiverse and...
You're seeing all the different iterations or like, to the extent of like, you know, okay, there's George Reeves and there's Christopher Reeves and then there's... bloody Nick Cage fighting John Peters' giant spider.
Yes, that's right.
From Superman Lives, the one that never got made.
Yeah, so just say that again. Nicolas Cage is in this film fighting the giant spider from the Superman film that never got made.
From Superman Lives.
It is a CGI Nick Cage, and I thought that was going to be a much better effect on this particular version, but it's like, no, that looks the same as it did on that one I saw.
They all look really... cheap. The whole because they're doing Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, the Flash storyline, and you've got literal planets colliding, all these literal kind of energy balls that represent the universes colliding, and with all these kind of weird passive super people standing by And it's odd and metaphysical and just and fan servicey and doesn't really work because it's an abstract sense of threat or you know, stakes. And you've obviously got Flash and other Flash and the third version, or which is younger Flash, who's become this creature who actually is a variation on a character from the comics whose name escapes me.
Oh, right, okay, because I've not actually read Flashpoint or Crisis.
And there was a sense of inevitability to it, where it's like, yeah, they're going to end up back in that space, the stakes are going to be massive, the creature we saw earlier is obviously, especially when he gets the thing through his arm, yeah, the shrapnel through his arm, and you're like, okay, so that's a version of him from the future, and that's how they're going to wrap this up, and I wasn't actually necessarily expecting them to kill the younger Flash, who then becomes this creature in order. And it's like, did that not create a paradox? Okay, we're not doing the paradox thing. Okay.
Well, at one point, the original Flash gets called the Eternal Paradox, I think, or something like that. And he's this thing that has to be overcome by the bad, well, like, you know, the Flash that's gone mad through going through all the different universes for, you would imagine, for tens of thousands, if not millions of years, trying to find a way to bring a happy ending to this one particular world. And then you have the worlds literally crashing into each other, but each world is a piece of pop culture from the DC universe. They look like film strips, and you've got the old Superman and the old Flash, and you have the old Batman in there as well. And then you have a Superman film that was never made that actually got a round of applause in our screening. And then you have
goddamn nerds.
And then you have Christopher Reeve and Helen Slater, Superman and Supergirl. And as you said, it's all very, very passive. And it's like, well, is this supposed to be like a last hurrah, and just for us to look at this and say, oh, look at all the pop culture that we've been given over the years? Okay, conceptually kind of interesting that all these things are crashing together and it all seems to be eating itself. The other thing being here is, I think it's like a meta commentary on fandom, because they keep trying to change the ending to what they think is the best thing that it could be, and keep going back and trying to get it again and become much more violent and much more kind of monstrous each time it doesn't happen for them. And it's like, is that a commentary on toxic fandom? I mean, if it is, interesting.
It can be if you want it to be.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because it's like, conceptually interesting, but dramatically inert, and there is no reason for Batman and for Supergirl to be in this film.
And it's like, you know, it's never like Andy Muschietti's ever made a monstrous creature of repetition before.
Go on.
In terms of his it, Pennywise, yeah, but literally this creature that lives in this liminal space and performs this horrific action over and over and over throughout the years.
That's right. And it's like, well, again, okay, conceptually interesting in terms of your previous movies, but again, people don't come to a Flash movie to watch interesting concepts at the end befuddle them. But to your point, they kind of back themselves into a bit of a cul-de-sac with this. It's like, because what do? You change it so that it does go right and that they do save that Earth. You can't do that because it's like, well, we've been there so many times, and that's not satisfying either.
The thematic arc is clear. It's obvious that you can't do that.
It sounds interesting that this person that can run at the speed of light is always moving, has to stop to really understand himself and his place in the universe. That is interesting, not in the way that it was done in this film. And it's like, well, none of that stuff with Batman or with Supergirl really mattered.
Also,
it was like a misdirect.
I think, no, actually, I'm not going to say that, because that's my just being, trying to apply my limited understanding of real-world physics to the Flash, in which case, obviously, as he's moving faster and everything else is moving slower and time moves differently, I'm not opening that box, because that's a different nerd box that we can...
Well, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't think any of the metaphysics in this film actually make any sense. It's like, it is just a hot mess, as Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne says at one point about the multiverse. It's like, well, yeah, that just there to lampshade the fact that your film is a hot mess.
Yeah.
But did you think that the ending and the fact that they couldn't save the day and that this world has to die just kind of undercut all the drama of having Batman and Supergirl in this film anyway and going on that big adventure?
Because ultimately it's saying, well, they're here to be sacrificed and to fail. And our whole third act is actually not the physical reality that we've set up. It's this abstract commentary.
Yeah, which just didn't work for me. It was,
and all of a sudden you'll go, okay, young Flash is dead, the creature we set up earlier is also gone, and we're back to the main narrative of the film. So the whole second act of the film doesn't matter.
And we also watched an entire world on the first day of the end of that world, with all the billions that are going to die, just so Barry can learn that sometimes you have to leave the tomatoes on the shelf.
Yeah, like, yes. Yeah, literally. It, like, a whole universe dies, and the whole second act of the film up into the climax, everything between the catalyst and the climax doesn't matter. So you've got the status quo and the denouement, and those are the only things in the film that actually matter.
I think you're right. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, is that what pop culture is? It's like, well, basically you press start and then it ends and you enjoy it in the middle, but it's all completely disposable. It's like, well, you've literally created a disposable second and most of the third act to your movie. If that's some kind of commentary, I don't care. It still doesn't work.
The only difference between if he'd taken Bruce's advice at the very beginning and actually gone back and made the minor change, or even just gone back and found out who did it so that he could track that person down in the present day and make him stand trial, is that you get George Clooney at the end. That's literally...
And that's the thing, is it's like... So just before we get on to George, there's a moment when the two Flashes and Supergirl slide into the foreground of the shot as they're about to go into battle. And I thought, oh, I'm enjoying this, because I do kind of enjoy these superhero smackdowns when they're done well. I just know that this doesn't mean anything because of what we've got coming up in about 10 minutes' time. And there are some people who listened to the last episode who might be saying, but you said with Neon Genesis Evangelion that it had this really interesting ending, and you were bemoaning the fact that people just wanted a big smackdown. It's like, yes, because that was weird and bold and radical the whole way through. This was a very, very traditional superhero film up until the ending, when it decided it wanted to do something conceptually different. And while it's interesting, dramatically, I just felt
it completely failed. The end of it, chapter two doesn't work.
Go on.
Because you do end up in the space where they're battling the Pennywise creature in its true form.
Which is like a big spider.
Which is like a big spider, this cosmic... That's only tangentially connected to the real world, although in the case of the film and the book, it does end up having real-world consequences. But yeah, because ultimately they just end up bullying Pennywise to death.
They do, which is so weird in that film. And do you know what would have made that film better? Nick Cage fighting that big spider. It was so weird when Nick Cage appeared. It was like, literally, this is the weirdest kind of fan service that we have now accepted is going to be part of our blockbuster entertainment.
Nick Cage, ironically, looking like Warren Beatty from Shampoo.
Yeah, he does a bit, doesn't he?
Which is also a part of the extended John Peters cinematic universe.
Yeah, that's right. Now, that is a proper deep cut. You can forget about your Sam Witwicky or whatever it was. Who was it?
Sam Witt.
Indeed, you read about him. But I will leave that bit in. There was one nice touch that was actually really quite subtle, because, of course, the other Barry becomes a bit of a supervillain at the end. He is really tickled by the Joker's laughing bag, in the way that the kind of original Barry isn't, and he just finds it like kind of just weird and a bit distracting. And so, well, that's actually quite a nice touch. The other Barry, like the Joker's little gag, there's maybe like a bit of foreshadowing that he was going to become quite dark at one point.
Yes, and the laughing bag being obviously what ends up lying next to the Joker's corpse after he falls out the belfry.
In the original Batman.
In the original Batman, yeah.
Or Batman 89. Oh my God, it's like a minefield.
I do wish that would have been a nice touch. And I know that would also have been very fan servicey, but it would have been nice to, because the idea that this is Batman at the end of his career, 30 years down the line, he's actually stopped being Batman because Gotham is now apparently safe. More of those kind of trophies in there. Actually, I know that they kind of did that a bit with Zack Snyder in Batman v Superman. But like the giant penny or
the big dinosaur,
yeah,
or
the
something.
Big dinosaur.
I don't know. I kind of think it would have been kind of more interesting. So, okay, so Gotham is completely safe now, but you've retreated into your shell because all you are is Batman. I kind of think that Bruce Wayne would have found other ways to make the world better. But anyway.
Do you know what they could have done? Because that bag is a memento from the person who killed his parents years before, and he only found the person who killed his parents up in that final confrontation. If that bag, maybe it's too cerebral, could have been used in a way to be like, to set Barry up at the end being like, oh no, I can just find out who killed my mum now.
Yeah, that's interesting, because that would have taken so much work to work that in, because you need to say to people, remember at the end of Batman. But yeah, I mean,
Barry literally could have just asked Batman about the bag and been like, what the fuck is this? It's like, belonged to the person who killed my mum. I killed my parents, I only found out years later. Did that help? you know, a bit, maybe, like, you know, did it help? Yeah. And then you just have that bag turn up right at the very end, and Barry goes, oh shit, actually the person who killed my mum. I'll just go and find out who that is then, shall I?
No, yeah, I stand completely corrected. That is a much more interesting thing than this film decided to do, I think.
Especially
that could have been worked in.
Younger Barry having the monkey toy took close to his heart.
Yeah.
And maybe the other Barry, you can then set up that, you can then pay off that gesture by having the other Barry, you just put that little bag.
Well, yeah, because one of the things that we've seen with Batman in the past is these weird kind of fetish objects that he has, like in the Nolan films with his mum's pearls and stuff.
Yeah, and Christian Bale not being in there.
I think that Nolan said, you're not touching my fucking trilogy. This is not going to be some weird canon for your fucking films. There is no Nolanverse in there. But there was an Inception poster in his room. There were lots of Warner Brothers film posters in Barry's rooms.
And the fact that it's like, okay, and we also obviously can't really get Val Kilmer to cameo because he's just not well. And also getting Val Kilmer to cameo in that final scene isn't as funny as getting George Clooney back, George Clooney being the one and done.
Yeah, so should we talk about George then? Because when I saw this film originally, the big change from what I saw tonight and what I saw then was that it stopped. You saw the foot come out of the car, and then you saw Barry say, who the fuck is this? And it literally just went to black and there were no credits. So we didn't get the end credit sequence either. And it was quite exciting and funny when I thought that was going to be the beginning of the Superman score. It was funny and exciting when George comes out with his million watt smile. What did you think of that moment?
Yeah, also, I can't remember having seen George at this age with that beard. Like, the only time I've really seen him looking like this is him trying to sell me Nespresso.
Yeah.
So I did think he was going to try and sell Barry Nespresso.
Because he never leaves a Batcave without a Bat Coffee.
Which is a reference to the Bat Card, which is the really horrible Shilly Amex ad in the middle of Batman and Robin.
Which is probably the lowest moment for Batman's. An orchestra.
Oh God, we're in Inception.
We are in Inception. There's other people coming as well. Okay then, well, let's
relocate.
We're just moving because I think that there might have been a bit of a kerfuffle there that the police were having to get involved in. We are in Crime Alley, Long's Court, just off Leicester Square, if anyone is interested. Yeah, indeed, yeah. In the dark shadows, Rob, that's right. We are now in the dark shadows of the National Gallery, away from the ironically brightly lit Crime Alley. So we'll wrap it up in just a second. Was there anything from the comics that this is based on that you can remember that is worth mentioning? Because I haven't actually read any of the Flash comics, I have to admit.
Well, again, it's kind of Flashpoint or Crisis on Infinite Earth. Like, again, I kind of know this stuff. I never was massively into comics, so I kind of just know this stuff from, like, Wikipedia rabbit holes and things that other people have referenced. And it's all been in the Flash TV series, which, you know, overlaps with the Supergirl TV series and Green Arrow, or Arrow, none of which, again, I've really watched, just because there's so much content. And Grant Gustin doesn't turn up. There's no Grant Gustin Flash, though there is the version of Wally West, who's like the Golden Age Flash you see in this, is the one from the Flash TV series.
The black and white guy running with what looks like a saucer on his head.
Jay Garrick, maybe?
Okay.
And again, yeah, so this is my vague nerd knowledge failing me at 9-something at night.
Okay then, so now we have a dustbin lorry going by. So very quickly to get into Spider-Verse. So we are going to give away some spoilers now for Spider-Verse. If you haven't seen Across the Spider-Verse, stop listening because we are going to give some spoilers now. Is there anything else you want to say about The Flash?
No, I think we've covered it.
What is that?
I think it's the Inception form, which is appropriate given we're about to do spoilers within spoilers.
It is, and also appropriate because I don't know if you noticed it, Rob, but the other side of the street has just curved up and is now kind of leaning over us. Why this didn't work as well as Spider-Verse, I thought, is because Across the Spider-Verse also talks about the fixed moments in time, the intersections and those things that, like, yeah, canon. Again, seems to be like a meta commentary on you can't change that because it's canon, and if you change it then the world will end. This is all in Spider-Verse. But the thing there is that it's like, I think what the film's going to say is, no, things can change. It doesn't have to be like a fixed way. That's what we're going to get in the next Spider-Verse film, I think. And I think that's like a much more kind of fresh and also, like, yeah, more creatively dynamic way,
and less,
rather than saying, no, you can't change anything. Well, yeah.
Because, like, ultimately, you're, like, then being like, I mean, Batman's thing about, like, on one hand, it's trying to give a good real-world lesson that you've got to move on from the past, you've got to grow, you've got to learn, as in, like, you can't just endlessly relive. But in the context of a superhero film where they literally can change the past, it just ends up feeling like, eh, don't worry about it.
Yeah, one of the things here seems to be that you can't let your trauma define you. It didn't beat him. He became bigger and he became a force for good because of his trauma.
I mean, ultimately, Batman and Miguel O'Hara in Spider-Man and Spider-Verse are coming from the same place. They've just drawn the different... Because with Batman, his understanding of you've got to move on from the past, you can't let it define you. Because obviously he's had to grow, he's had to change. You know, like, he hasn't had to really deal with this metahuman shit very much until his relatively later years. Whereas with Miguel O'Hara, his experience is like, these things need to continue to exist. You can't change because something terrible will happen. Because I am familiar with the multiverse, and those are the rules of the multiverse. And it's also interesting how they deal, because all of the alternate spider people that you get within, into this, you know, across the Spider-Verse, are in dynamic sequences where even if it's just cameoing or you're seeing them en masse, they have a role to play. It's not like the film suddenly just stops and goes, here's a slideshow.
And that's the thing, is that the end of The Flash does just stop and give you lots and lots of DC history. I think it also kind of like, yeah, boils down to Across the Spider-Verse says a superhero will not say, okay, I'm fine with that, I will passively stand by and let someone die because I just understand that's for the greater good. They'll always say, no, I will save as many as I can. Whereas the point of this film seemed to be, sometimes you just need to stand by and stop and just let what's going to happen happen. What a weirdly inert way to make a superhero film, that you just stop and just say, yeah, because if you don't, terrible things will happen. And again, it just seems to be going back to that fandom thing about, like, if you try and change it, it just becomes monstrous. Oh, it's a bit of a hot mess plate of spaghetti, this film.
And it's weirdly, like, the end of the first Doctor Strange film, obviously being part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is him arguing with Dormammu repeatedly over and over and over until he gets it right. You know, if you apply that logic to the real world, it's not healthy. But when you apply real world logic to a superhero film and apply those limitations, you can end up with something quite dramatically unsatisfying and quite limited, because again, they're not playing in the real world. You can only apply those real world lessons when those real world lessons apply.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty nice way to end it, to be honest. I'm trying to think if there was anything else in this film that... Yeah. Actually, let's quickly talk about the end credits sequence. So Aquaman... It's actually quite a nice one. It's after all the credits have ended. Yeah, it was a funny scene with Aquaman, I thought. Probably setting up the Aquaman film coming along later this year.
Barry go out and get drunk, and Barry can't get drunk because of his metabolism. Aquaman ends up face down in a puddle. And again, also, I mean, like, I think that's not quite within two films within the space of a month, but two of the biggest blockbusters in the space of 6 weeks, with Jason Momoa at least in some way present.
Yeah.
Between this and Fast X. And also, I didn't clock it. Well, I clocked it in the end credits before it, that Jason Momoa is credited as, like, singing a sea shanty. And I was like, didn't pick up at that at all in the film. Maybe I just missed it. Yeah, it's because it's in the post-credit scene you haven't seen yet.
Yeah, it's like a bit of a spoiler that you don't realise that you're looking at. I'm kind of glad that they put it on at the end. It was just nice because we sat through all the credits and saw that one of the production crew was called Axe Elvis. So there is a person out there somewhere called Axe Elvis. That was cool. Okay, the Flash movie, that's what it was. It was really enjoyable for huge parts of it. I just thought that ending was like, okay, you have written yourself into a cul-de-sac and you're trying to kind of weirdly Nolan your way out of it, but also commenting on all of pop culture that we have created from the fucking DC universe. Not dramatically satisfying, guys.
Yeah, if you ever wanted to see beloved celebrities, some of whom are dead, recreated at, like, I don't know, PS4 level? Like, graphics? Trying to be fair?
Yeah, the Uncanny Valley was quite wide, wasn't it?
Them all just kind of... Actually, Nick Cage got a bit of action, but mostly, for the most part, them just kind of smiling benignly at this scene as their universes are smushed together. Like, enormous balls of, like mochi balls, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, okay then. Well, anything else to say about The Flash?
Bring on the James Gunn soft reboot.
Well, I'm glad you're looking forward to that. Oh, yeah. Actually, one more thing to say about Spider-Verse. On the previous episode, we were talking about the fact that Donald Glover plays the uncle in Homecoming and is going to become the Prowler at some point, and in this universe appears to become the Prowler and is incarcerated because of it. a friend of ours also pointed out was that Miles Morales was actually based on Donald Glover in the Spider-Man costume from an episode of Community, the look of him, and it's like, oh wow, that's so cool. So but it's cool though.
You can change things retroactively.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, this is how it's done, guys. All right, cool. Yeah, I'm not sure what's coming next. Indiana Jones, I suppose.
Yeah, probably.
Talking about pop culture eating itself. So we will see you in a couple of weeks for Indiana Jones. So Rob, thank you very much.
And thank you very much.
And thank you all for listening, and we will come right back at you very, very soon, very, very fast. Ah.
Oh my God! Flash!
Hi.
I love you.
Thank you.
Patching you into Mr. Wayne.
No, please don't.
I need you here now, Barry.
If I travel back to 1969 and I was frozen in 1967, presumably I could go visit my frozen self. But if I'm still frozen in 1967, how could I have been unthawed in the 90s and travel back to... Oh no, I've gone cross-eyed.
I suggest you don't worry about this sort of thing and just enjoy yourself. That goes for you all, too.
Yes.